The following program may contain content that your kids would love to hear, but you may not want them to.
Frank Cotolo. He just talks and 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 talks.
Hello. Come in. Watch your step there. Oh, now we're all inside. And in here, there's horror, terror, mayhem. And it smells awful. That's because this is Inner Sanctum.
I'm scared, Pete. This house feels haunted, and the stench, Pete, you!
Wow. Come on, Jim, you know, a smell never killed anyone, just hold your nose.
It's not helping, I tell you, it's getting me, Pete! Pete, it's ripping at my nostril hairs! Pete, help! Ah!
Jim, where are you?
And he thought a smell couldn't be deadly. Stay tuned for part two of our odorous mystery when we return to Inner Sanctum.
It's all in the percentages. Yeah. Person can get you through the next 120 minutes alive. Me, though I be a difficult historian, and I am the bard of the interweb, the king of the web. I am the godfather of internet radio. I am. Me. Actually, I'm just the bard of broadcasting, because this is where it all began. And that's why I can get you through. My name is Frank Atolo, the man whose name adorns the title of the show. And so it goes on this First day of summer. Y2K plus 18. As we are recording live, here we are. Stay with us. We've got a great guest. A whole bunch of things. Things now. Wake up. It's night. Night. Ice cap to ice cap, from Hamlet to City, from Othello, and into every bordello. What else would they listen to in those wonderful rooms of decay? I don't know. I'm not going to editorialize on that. I'm just going to tell you, as I do every time I'm here. My name is Frank Cotolo, man of name, adorned the title of the show. I am the Bard of Broadcasting. I can say that with all fiber. What was I supposed to say? Right? I always talk. I talk to the side as if someone's here. There's no one here. Someone will be here by phone. This is going to be fun too, because we're going to talk to somebody who doesn't have Skype. So once again, we're going to have to get onto the phone. That means I have to, rig some stuff up, but this is going to be good because Sheldon Cohen, I'm really wanting to talk to him. And I thank Mr. Zucker for getting us together. And Mr. James Lowe, you know him as Jiggy Jaguar, who's always on the lookout for guests who might be interested in me, per se, that my audience does want to know about. So Sheldon Cohen, who, one of those people, there have been a couple of people on this show over the years who I may have met, but I don't know, because they worked in places where I worked. And we did not meet at that time, so we don't know each other. No less that there are people who were born in the same city as I was born, the third largest city in the world, which is not a city on its own. You all know that because you've heard, if you've been here. A lot of people haven't been here, though. I can't do this anymore. It's too long. After 20 years, I can't say, you remember that? Remember that? You've heard that before. Because we've turned over audiences so much in the past 20 years. So what we will do is continue, and we will also continue to bring you old shows. How old shows? They'll be new to you, you see? New to you shows, because you weren't around when these shows were aired, when there was a lot less to listen to on internet airwaves. If they are airwaves, they're not airwaves, the internet. And you know, the zeros, the ones and stuff, way before. All you need to do is depend on me to find a fascinating show that we've done over the past 20 years. And I'll be on live anyway. It's not going to be like a rerun. I'm going to come on, talk about what we're going to talk about, and then you're going to hear the original talk about what I talked about, and sometimes guests, what they talked about with me when I talked about that with them. So if you go to, CotoloChronicles.blogspot.com. You can scroll through the years and find a show there that you might like. You say, what are you looking for shows? Well, you find the topic, you know, the show, the date, and tell me, email me, fcotolo@yahoo.com. Hey, did you hear? Here's a little bit of internet news. Yahoo Messenger, which has been around for like ever. I don't know if it was here before the AOL little thing, but it's been here a long time, the Yahoo Messenger. As of July 16th, I think, or 17th, no more Messenger. They're tossing it out. They're throwing it away. They're going to destroy. So I don't know if you have an app or whatever. You ain't going to work. They're allowing you now, if you go to somehow save all of your conversations. I don't know how that works. See your local Yahoo website and find out. But that's it, man. So if you have friends who you only communicate with on Yahoo Messenger, the Yahoo IM, you're in trouble unless you let them know or they let you know or you find another way to get in touch with one another. Are there people who still only have contacts in Yahoo? Beside me, I mean, because there are. But I guess now with the phone, we're already up to what? What is it? Phone? iPhone 20 or 8 or what have you? Well, I don't know. So that's going. We'll tell you more about that as it goes. And we'll try it again later, too. What else? Plenty else. Because we're going to be talking to Sheldon Cohen. And it's going to be fascinating, I hope. Because we have a few things in common. But that's not why. When two people who talk to one another from a perspective that is similar, and things are really cool, that you really know what's going on. But I'm going to have to see, there's a phone ringing. Now, hear that? Listen, can you hear that up there? Yeah. Probably one of those fake phone calls. So what we're going to do is I'm going to run and get that phone shortly, and then I'm going to call Mr. Cohen. You hear it? You know, I'm going to tell you, what is that phone? What is that phone? I'm going to tell you what is, that's probably one of those bad phone calls, bad robocalls. That's it. Robocalls, telemarketers. You don't even hire telemarketers anymore. Well, they do. Some do. Now they just have these robots that make believe they're real and they try to get you to talk. I've been running interference on these scams for like a long time. Years and years and years. Ever since the Nigerian email scam. Remember that? No, you don't. Okay. And so I may be looking into this one shortly, but we, stopped using phones for guests, although we have now and then, whenever there were people who didn't have Skype or some other clearer application or program that allowed us to speak so that you can hear better, not like those telephone talk shows. But, so now and then we're so interested in a certain guest that we have to use the phone. That means I'm going to have to see this little thing here. Going to have to contraption this little thing. My microphone's going to have to come off here. I'm going to have to go get that phone. And we're going to use that to talk to Sheldon Cohen. We got things coming up, in the next couple of weeks, as summer ensues, including, those shows I told you about. I have a couple of shows. If you don't go to the blog and find things, and people who don't call me, there's tons of stuff we can still listen to. We're also going to have more guests. That's right. More guests are coming. Who else? Well, I don't know. We're going to have more guests. We heard from Dr. Popoli. He's doing fine, but we're going to have to hear from him again shortly. He'll be back. I'm going to try and get Dr. Woldar on because it's summer and he's not working, I guess, unless he teaches summer school. See, there are people who continue to work. You know, it's not like every people go to school. And people who do go to school, people who teach and work in school, that doesn't mean that they're out of school. People who go to school doesn't mean you're out of school for the summer. It's not like the old days, my old days at least, when summer was summer. That was it. No school. Forget about it. Forget about it. Okay? And that was it. You could go to summer school, but in those days, summer school wasn't to make up any credits. Summer school was a bad thing. Summer school was where you went if you failed something and had to try to make it up so that you could move on in the next semester, which wasn't called the semester. It was just called the grade. Things have changed even since this show. I got a call from, I received a call. Let me try to speak as well as I hope people can speak this language. I received a call from a man named Zucker, Mr. Zucker, as I told you, turned on to me from Jaguar, who was in Indiana. What's he doing in Indiana? There used to be a guy in New York who used to say, he's like, and I'm going to say like, you know, dog crap. I'll say dog crap. He's like dog crap. He's everywhere. Yeah, that was how he described somebody who was, just transient. You know, somebody who traveled a lot or was here and there. And he's like dog crap. He's like, that's not a very nice thing to say, but that's what people said back in New York. And by the way, that's what I mean because, Mr. Cohen, who lived and worked many years in California, I have a lot of notes on him. Yeah, I did. I made some notes because I want to make sure I said a few things. And there's some history involved in this that has been talked about on this show. Like, when Steve Allen died And I told the story of meeting Steve Allen and my meeting Steve Allen and getting influenced, I guess we have to say that, at an early age in terms of broadcasting from Steve Allen by Steve Allen, and even in humor from Steve Allen by Steve Allen, blah, blah, blah. When Steve Allen died, we talked a lot about The Tonight Show. I didn't talk a lot about the Johnny Carson Tonight Show, which is what most people remember because that was the prime, the mass commercial age of the Tonight Show. But back when it was just Tonight, and it was at NBC, it was Steve Allen. Tonight, Steve Allen was the first host, and we talked a lot about that because those were some of my earliest recollections. And I mean early, because I think I'm talking about five and six years old, learning about, listening to this guy and watching this guy on a television, which was pretty much a brand new thing still at that time. So Mr. Cohen worked for 30 years on The Tonight Show, the Johnny Carson Tonight Show. And as it turns out, because I looked up some of his history, he was on Tonight with Steve Allen. So some of the stuff that we're going to talk about, and I said I may have met him because later on when I was working in the confines of the Burbank Studios, I don't want to repeat this stuff because he's going to talk, but we're going to be interviewing him, but, you know, we're going to be talking in conversation. And at the Burbank NBC Studios where The Tonight Show moved from New York with Johnny Carson, and Mr. Cohen was there as a music director. We'll find out more about what he said. But the point is, there I was. I was there a lot of times doing, working with Wolfman Jack in various television shows, including the Midnight Special and some other shows we did there, because NBC did tape their shows there. And about a half a mile, that's a humongous place. Like a half a mile or so down the corridor around, because there are all these different studios, you know, 1A, 12A, 6A. I don't remember exactly what. There was the Tonight Show Theater where they did the Tonight Show, taped it, and we were here and there and everywhere. So I used to run down there every now and then and check in what was happening on the taping of Carson. And so who knows? I might have bumped into Mr. Cohen. I don't know. I think, it's good. Anyway, he has a book. Okay. The book is called From Brooklyn to Burbank. And that, of course, would get my attention. So when, Mr. Zucker called me and told me about the book From Brooklyn to Burbank, well, you know, I went from Brooklyn to Burbank too. Right? Because that's what I did in those days back then when I was doing things like Interstinctum. Now, if you didn't tune in, you'll have to listen to it again. And by the way, you can listen to it again or other shows and other shows, which are archived at juicedtalk.com. Juicedtalk.com. Plenty of shows there, too. Savino Veritas is there. And he literally went from Brooklyn to Burbank because he lives in Burbank. Did I just give away a secret? I don't know. Oh, the coffee is coming up. And my diet's going well, by the way. Thank you very much. Very well, going very well. And I'm just trying to lose some weight. And summer is I guess it's a good time to lose weight because you don't eat that much in summer. You drink a lot. You stay liquid. Remember, and we said this from the very beginning of this show 20 years ago or somewhat, whenever, eons ago. And that is that dehydration is the enemy. If you learn nothing from the show, and you will learn a lot of things, you know that. Then, also from Mr. Zucker, in the future, and it might be the near future, Olympia LaPointe. I'm going to have on Olympia LaPointe. You know how much I like outer space and things that have to do with science and technology, that, right? Because we have Dr. Waldor on, and we've had a number of things have to do with psychology and science and space and math and whatever. Olympia LaPointe is a rocket scientist. She's a rocket scientist. That's good. So yes, we're going to have her on, and she'll be on Skype because I hear she has Skype. What rocket scientist doesn't have Skype? I guess, right? Okay, here's what's going to happen now. I have to go get the phone. Now, I had to keep the phone in the carriage because I don't want the phone to die of its battery because I don't have the... Okay, you don't need to know that, right? What you need to know is that I'm going to get the phone and we're going to call Mr. Cohen and I'm going to hook up this thing that has to do with this thing. You know, maybe I could, I'm going to hook it up and it's going to be fine. Believe me, I'm going to work it out. My name is Frank Atola. Man whose name adorns the title of the show. And coming up shortly is that. Meantime, let me do this, which I usually do at the top of the hour, but we're not going to do it. So we'll do it now so I can run away and you don't just have dead air. Speaking of dead air, you might want to go to Juice Talk and listen to the Savino Cotolo classic 70s comedy show, Dead Air. They've been restored thanks to Mr. Savino's technical know-how and prowess. And you can listen to those shows. You can download them. They're free. You know, we're not like those other guys. We give you things for nothing. Maybe that's why we're broke, but you know, these things happen. Listen to this for a minute and get yourself some beverage and get ready. We're going to call Mr. Cohen and try to get this together.
Cotolo Chronicles, the internet talk show from the neo-postmodern world.
Keep listening, because we're right here. My name is Frank Tolman. His name adjoins the title of the show. And we are on, this is Dead Air. This is how crazy I am. I wonder who was that on? Who was calling me? It must have been one of those weird. Let's see how we're going to do this. If we do this, let's see. How am I going to do this? All right, take this out. I know I'm sorry I have to put you through this, but we do have to, this is how much I want to talk to. Oh wait, I could do this. This is how much I want to talk to Mr. I know, right? Yeah, it's like we're back in the old days. Hold on, maybe I can also use this. Here, wait, I got an idea. We're going to have two mics. This way I can talk. I could talk and listen. Wow. They get these windscreens on this thing and they're like completely eaten away. Now, let's see how high I can get this volume here. Where's the volume? Let's see, volume. Is that volume? No, that's not volume. Where's volume? Hold on a second. I have volume on here. See, oh, volume here. This is, oh, it's all volume. Is that wild? Here, let's see. Is that as loud as it goes? This is great, huh? How come I can't get the volume up? Let's see. We're going to get him here shortly. Listen. Okay. Hold on. Let's see. Well, let's get the volume up here. Why doesn't the volume move is what I want to know. Oh, here. That's as loud as it goes? Wow. All right, Kingdom for Skype. All right, we're going to deal with this. Oh, jeez, the microphone's going to break in half. And this is fun, though, because it reminds me of the old days. All right, we're going to get... let's see. If we can get him on the phone... I'm going to have to lean down here, too. This is going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a lot of fun. I know what I can do. I can get... I can make him louder by doing this here. Oh, boy, if we're on television... You would see this is wonderful. Okay, I could talk through here too. See? See, you can't see anything. Now, if I move this boom here, let me move this boom in. Oh boy, we got a great show for you. Right here. I know, it's kind of, let's see. Let's see. Now, if I. Yeah, that can go loud, see? Yeah, okay. All right. Okay, we'll get him on there loud, and then I'll be here. And I'll be here. I'll be here. I guess he can hear me from here. Wait a second. I can... Oh, yeah, there's that. Or maybe he can just hear me from here. Hear me from here. Oh, my goodness. Let's get... Okay, how's it... Okay, recording's going well. Okay, fine. So then that... we'll do this. Let's call Mr. Cohen and try to get this thing started. My name is Frank Cotone. Man's name and George, the title of the show. We have a couple of minutes before we get him. And I have settled all this because I'm not the master of sound. I'm the bard of broadcasting. So there's that. Books, his book, From Brooklyn to Burbank, available at Amazon. It's exactly where you get my books. So if you've been buying them, and I thank you for you people who have been buying them over there at Amazon. You can also get Mr. Cohen's book there. This one works too, right? Yeah, this one. Wow. Wow, this is amazing. I don't know why the volume doesn't go up, though. I guess it's weird. You can get the book there in the digital proportions and on your phone. I think that, you know, I don't even think there's... I think everything works with everything now, right? They tried to just have like one format, like the Kindle or something, and then another one. Oh, look at all this. The windscreen. Oh, man. It's just coming apart. There's no reason to even have this. I think we just take it off. Oh, my God. It's falling. It's shredding. Oh, my God. Maybe I take the whole thing off. Oh, my goodness. That's terrible. Now I get this ugly stuff all over my... Okay. All over my desk. What is this made of? Anyway, what are windscreens made of? Does anyone know? Write to me. I guess it's some kind of... Let me move it over there. Okay, let me call him, and we'll get him on the phone. I guess you'll have to dial 8, right? Okay, and let's see. Well, he'll be able to hear us, I know. Is this 8? Okay. Let's see. Can you hear?
Shelly Cohen here.
Mr. Cohen, can you hear me?
I sure can. Is this Frank?
This is Frank. How are you?
I'm Frank. I'm fine. I'm looking forward to a chat with you today.
This is the chat. We're having it.
Yeah, are you on the air yet?
Yeah, we are. Yes, we are on the air.
Okay. Well, how are you?
Well, I'm doing fine. I was telling everyone a little bit about you and about some of the things they may already know because we have...
Okay.
In the past, I've talked about lots of times about Mr. Steve Allen, and I've talked about the Tonight Show and various. And everyone knows I'm from Brooklyn, and I went to Burbank just like you, and I've been hawking your book.
Oh, you are the best! Yeah.
So I want.
There'll be a nice package for you at Christmas time.
Ah, Hollywood.
Tell me, whereabouts in Brooklyn are you from?
I was born in Bensonhurst.
I know where that is.
Yeah, that's where...
I was born in Williamsburg.
Oh, wow. And when I was growing up, that was a place you didn't go.
Oh, really? You had to belong to some sort of a group to protect yourself, I guess.
Yeah, I was in Bensonhurst, you know, around where Ralph Cramden lived.
Ralph Cramden. Oh, my gosh. Round what a great show that was.
You
know, it's nice. What school did you go to, by the way? What schools?
Let's see. I started at, what was it, PS? Remember when they were PS and just numbers?
I was PS 122.
Wow. Oh, that's funny, because I moved from PS48 to PS121.
Wherever that is.
It's invented.
Where that is. What about high school? Where did you go to high school? Erasmus?
No, I didn't. I went to a brand new high school they actually built, Franklin Delano Roosevelt High School.
Oh, well, that was before my time.
Yes. Yeah. Matter of fact, I was, it was a brand new school, and I lived right by it. Actually built a high school while I was alive. They don't do those anymore, do they?
Well, that's nice. Yeah, my school has been closed now for many years. Every once in a while, I hear somebody who's gone back there. The building is still there, but no students. It's a different genre now.
So what?
Anyhow, I'm glad that you're interested in this late night television. I've been involved with that for a long time myself. You know, it's in a different capacity, though, I'm sure.
Well, when you were, when you were in the Burbank doing the Carson show.
Right.
When you were there, I don't know if we ever crossed paths, but I was there many hours, because I worked with Wolfman Jack. That's very good.
What a voice he
has. It's very good. I worked with him on the Midnight Special, which we were down the hall and around. Do you remember that?
Well, we may have crossed paths in the commissary or something.
Right.
I never was introduced to you, but
no, I know.
No, yeah, I'm glad that we are compatriots, so to speak.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that have showed up over the years that I've been doing this, who I may have met, but I don't know, because they were all in, they all wound up.
It gets compartmentalized. You work in a certain area, you don't get around to some of the other production things that are going on.
Plus,
the name of the game.
And you know how transient it is, because you know how many people out there came from our birthplace.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mel Brooks came from Eastern District High School, as a matter of fact.
We could go on. Jackie Gleason, we just mentioned before. Ralph Kern.
Yeah, and Barbara Streisand came from Erasmus Hall High School.
Danny Kaye came from Brooklyn.
Danny Kaye was a Brooklynite.
Right.
Yes, we've had an illustrious background group, I think. They've done well. I think they represented Brooklyn in a nice way. You know.
So tell me, when did you go, or why did you originally leave Brooklyn, which is, I think that's always a very weird question, because I don't know anybody who never wanted to, was there who didn't want to leave Brooklyn.
Well, I'll tell you what, we had two children, and we were living in Crown Heights, if you know where that is.
Yes, I do.
And the schools weren't to our liking, so we were looking around Avenue T in Coney Island.
Mm-hmm.
We never found anything we liked until one of my musical friends lived in Teaneck, New Jersey, said, "Why don't you come out my way?" Well, one weekend we packed our car up, a little Studebaker Lark, Route 17, went into a real estate broker, and 2 weeks later we owned a house.
Wow.
That's exactly what happened.
What were you doing?
It is $18,900 for the house.
Wow. What,
you can't even buy a cabinet for that.
Where did you buy the house in L.A.?
In Paramus.
Oh, okay.
You know where that is.
Sure.
That's across the GWB.
Sure. And then, why did you, what happened to California? How'd you get to California? What were you doing in
California? California, there's a whole, Tonight Show started in 1962, at 30 Rockefeller Plaza, and after 10 years, they made a decision to go to Burbank because they thought they would get more
guests,
more access to stars.
Mm-hmm. Well, wait. Let me stop.
They made me an offer I couldn't refuse. Well, I packed up our prairie schooner with the kids in one car and California.
Yeah,
that's where we are.
Let me ask. Well,
and you take a chance because shows don't necessarily last too long. I mean, who would know that we'd go 30 years? And so we just took a chance, the whole family. It was a great move.
But Shelley?
Yeah.
At the International Movie Database, where you're listed there, and it says that you did something before it was The Tonight Show, when it was with Steve Allen, Tonight?
Yeah, I worked with Skitch Henderson.
Right, Skitch, right.
He was the musical director, and I was his librarian for a brief time. And we did, you know, Steve Allen's original show
right.
was very much like The Tonight Show.
Right.
Then he branched out to a Sunday night opposite Ed Sullivan with a variety show.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I really got my teeth into television. I really learned my craft there.
So you were with Steve from...
And then after that, there was kind of a lull, and we had a bunch of other Tonight Show people sitting in that number one spot. And one day I get a call from Skitch. She said, "Listen, Shelley, I got this show with Johnny Carson. It's called The Carson's Tonight Show, and I want you to be my assistant conductor." I was still in school.
What?
It was called a night school.
Really?
But it turned out to be great.
And how were you, what's your background in music in New York? What did you do there?
In New York?
Yeah.
Well, I started out as a clarinetist.
Mm-hmm.
And then I studied the violin. We studied at Juilliard, but I did a lot of club dates.
You know,
if people don't know what club dates are. It's
I do.
And bar mitzvahs.
Yeah, I did them. I did them for years.
I get to play. Then I went in the army for a couple of years during the Korean War, and when I came out, I got a job. You're not going to believe this, but in the mailroom at NBC.
I do believe it.
In the mailroom.
Yeah.
It's like a Horatio Alger story. And I figured that would be the best place to meet people. And sure enough, one day I met Skitch Henderson. I delivered mail to his office. I said, "Skitch, where do you want me to put the mail?" He said, "Over in that box in the corner," which I did. And I said, "Oh, Mr. Henderson, maybe I could talk to you a little bit. I'm studying music. Can I talk to you about what opportunities there might be?" He said, "Sure, come around noon." Well, after lunch, I hopped up to his office. He spent an hour with me telling me all the possibilities.
Hmm.
And then after a while, I used to go there occasionally, and he had me work for him. It's just wonderful how it turned out. Then eventually I got a job in the music library. But he was my mentor, my original mentor.
Okay, let me ask you a question. I don't know how sensitive this might be, but Skitch got into some trouble, didn't he? Is that why it was all over for Skitch? Because he just disappeared and a lot of people don't know what happened.
I'll tell you the story.
Good. Please.
I was sitting at my desk one day at NBC. It was about 3 years into the show or so. I don't remember exact things. And Mike Zanella, Johnny's assistant, came in with a letter. He said, "Shelley, I think you ought to read this." Now, I'm paraphrasing here.
Sure.
It went something like this. "Dear Mr. Carson, my daughter came from Ohio with a couple of her nuns and her teachers to have an audition with The Tonight Show with Skitch Henderson. He made improper advances to her, and I want him fired immediately, or I'm going to sue you up the yin-yang."
Mm.
And he signed his name and carbon copied president of NBC, president of RCA, and Cardinal Spellman.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I saw that letter and I said, "Well, I guess my career is over. You know, when the leader goes, you go."
Mm.
But that's not how it happened. That night, I remember Johnny coming over to Skitch and he whispered something in his ear. And I assume he wanted to talk to him. 30 days later, they made an excuse that Skitch is going to be moving on to something else. That was the end of it. Right there. The good part of it was the producer, Art Stock, called me in his office. He said, "Shelley, we know you didn't have anything to do with this. You stick around. You're still here." And
well,
I did.
Now today, of course, with all the things that have happened today, that fits right into the whole Me Too thing, huh?
Yep.
Wow.
It never got any more than that. You know, it didn't make the papers or anything, which is, you know,
maybe
a good thing.
Well,
he went on to have his own career. He had a couple other problems.
Yeah, he did. But did he go to jail?
It was his demise.
Did he go to jail?
Me, Frank?
Did he go to jail?
That's another story.
Oh, okay.
You want to hear that one?
That's the one I heard. Yeah, go ahead and tell the story.
This one is a little bit longer.
It's all right. We got
the first time he left NBC, and I lost track of him. I came out to California. One day, I'm sitting in my house in the morning and didn't have to go to work till the afternoon, and I get a phone call from NBC Security. There are two treasury agents would like to talk to you. And I said, well, put them on. The guy spoke to me, said, we'd like to interview you. I said, well, I'll be in at 2 o'clock. He said, no, we're coming out to your house.
Hmm.
Okay, I gave him instructions. Half an hour later, there's a knock on the door. They showed me their badges. Could we go someplace where it's nice and quiet? Okay, we went, and we can't have your wife with us. So all for the next half an hour, they asked me many questions about music, who owned such and such a music business. I couldn't figure out what they were driving. And finally, I said, what's this all about? Well, it seems that Skitch Henderson is being investigated for making a donation to the University of Wisconsin of his library and taking a rather large deduction on his income tax.
Think
that it's fraudulent.
Mm.
I said, okay. And I go to work that day. When work was over, I got a tap on my shoulder with a subpoena to appear before the grand jury in New York Southern District. Give me a break. Holy crap. So, of course, I get on the plane. And they asked me, like, five questions at the grand jury. Next to me was a couple of people that I recognized. And then I left. Well, don't you think these guys came back in about 6 months?
Mm.
These investigators asked me a whole bunch more questions. And when it was over, they said, we're giving you a subpoena to be a witness for the prosecution.
Dun, 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 dun.
Can you imagine how I felt? It was the guy who gave me my first break.
Wow.
And I'm going to be a witness for the prosecution. Well, I'll cut the story a little bit shorter. I go into New York. They want me there a few days before. And in this room, they had this whole library they donated, all with metal bands on it and everything. He said, please go through the library and tell me if it's authentic or whatever it is. And I did.
Mm-hmm.
Then they went over the questions they were going to ask. It was like a loose-leaf book full of questions. Oh,
wow.
And I said, I called my lawyer, by the way, before that. I said, what do I do about this? He said, Shelley, there's only one thing you do. Tell the, what's the next word?
Truth.
You bet.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, it's going to be damning because he did a bad thing. Now I go in the room before they call me, and there is Leonard Bernstein.
Wow.
And Henry Mancini.
Wow.
I didn't know them, but they were there as well. Also witnesses for the prosecution.
So you were all subpoenaed? You were all subpoenaed?
In his affidavit had said that he consulted with them about the value of the music, but he never did. So I go out there, my God, my legs were shaking, and there was Skitch about 10 feet from me, his wife and his lawyer. And the prosecution, I went on there for 2 hours. 2 hours.
Yeah.
It just took the life out of me. Finally, I left, got home. On the telly, it said Skitch Henderson is found guilty, sentenced to 8 months in Allenwood. Hmm. Allenwood was where the Watergate guys were.
Sure.
It's like a, I don't know, it's a be easy.
Yeah, it's a.
Save your time.
Yeah.
But anyhow, he got out after 4 months, started a new career.
Oh, that's all?
He was fine after that.
4 months.
That's a story.
Well, that clears up like years of what I thought.
Yeah. Well,
I thought he went away for a longer time than that.
There was just something in him that a little larceny, I think.
Yeah.
That it finally caught up to him. What can I tell you?
Well, so many people got into tax problems that they don't now. Because they're now their managers, agents just steal the money and go away.
Well, it's I just can't deal with that.
Did you when you were at
very nerve-wracking. I wouldn't go through that for anything.
Well, I appreciate you telling the story. Let me ask you something. When you were in New York when you were doing the library or whatever at the Tonight when it was Tonight, what was that, 53 to 56? Was that
60? Oh, you mean you're talking about Steve Allen?
Yeah.
Oh, Steve Allen was right before, you know, maybe it was, yeah, it might have been after I got out of the Army and was in the music library. Yeah.
Did you?
Somewhere in there. I don't remember the exact date.
Did you know or meet Ernie Kovacs? He was originally on that show, wasn't he? The original?
I worked the Ernie Kovacs show.
Oh, great.
With
Edie Adams. Right. Yeah.
I worked that show. They had an afternoon show.
Right.
And as a librarian, I was involved with that. I loved Ernie Kovacs.
Yeah, there's.
But he was great. He died rather young, though. I think.
Well, sure, he did. That was a tragic thing. But you don't hear. I don't know if there are any books or biography. You just hear so little about him. What did you know about him, or what, how did you work?
He had a mustache. And my involvement was the musical director, and I don't remember the guy's name, but I did some writing for them.
Jack, he learned.
But I liked him very much. He had kind of an. Oh, I love when he did the thing with the gorillas.
Yeah, he did TV. I mean,
something had a name for it, but that was so funny.
He really found that medium. I mean, he knew what to do before anybody did anything. He was.
Yeah, did you have any connection with him at all?
No, not at all. He was gone well before I was involved.
Okay.
But
well,
I loved that. I loved all that stuff.
Unfortunately, he didn't.
Yeah, I know.
But he had the potential. He did a couple of movies, right?
Yeah, but his television things have influenced an awful lot of comedians. So.
I would say you're 100% right.
And there's too many who don't know about him. It's just so I just wondered if you had any moments of Ernie Kovacs.
No, I don't. But maybe somebody has written a biography of him. Somewhere.
I'll have to look into it. Okay, let's
go on Litkin and find him.
So when you went to when you first went to California, where did you live in the beginning? Did you live close to Burbank? Is that why the book?
No, I lived out in Woodland Hills.
Oh,
schools were good for the kids.
Woodland Hills,
and
wow.
Other than the rush hour.
Yeah, it's quite a ride.
30 minutes.
Yeah, that's quite a ride.
That was very convenient. Yeah. The problem was going home. You're heading right into the sunset. Oh, I'll tell you, I think I'm
right.
Turning my eyes out of the sunset.
That, yeah.
Tough, blinding.
What was
relatively close. I liked it.
And what was a daily, what would be, how did you work that? You taped it? Because that's the other thing Carsten wanted to do, right? He didn't want to do anything live. That was the other reason for getting out there.
No, they did what they call live on tape.
Oh, yeah, well, that's tape.
In those days, we had an editor. We had Priscilla Goodbody, we used to call her.
Oh.
And she used to make sure we didn't say any bad words.
Right.
Or so they taped in the afternoon, and if they had to do any quick editing, they had enough time before it starts to air in New York. That was we taped in the afternoon, so they had enough time to fix it. We never did it live,
right.
As I recall. There was always a delay, and I think it was because if they had to fix something, it would be available.
Well,
it
maybe
happened too often, but once in a while they would.
Well, Carsten had a huge influence. He practically owned the show by the time it was over, right? Didn't he own that entire hour?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
I said Carsten had such a huge influence. I mean, just to be able to move it to California.
Oh, yes. He was responsible for 20% of NBC's earnings.
Yeah,
it's a very cheap show to produce. You pay the guests hardly anything.
Right.
And the only big, of course, above the line was Johnny's salary and Ed and Doc. The rest of that stuff, easily was covered by the income they were getting.
Mm-hmm.
It's sales. It's all based on the numbers. You know this.
Sure.
Based on the numbers of people watching. And so we would have 12 million people a night watching the show. One time, it was even higher than that. But, he did really well. He knocked off the competition without too much trouble.
And there was a lot of...
He was quite a guy. I know him personally, and we had...
tell us more, because...
He had a few things in common. I like Johnny very much.
I read his manager, or one of his managers, or his main manager. I forgot his name. Did you read that book?
No.
Oh, I forgot.
I don't recall it.
But
he had several managers, and some of them worked out better than others. But Johnny was an interesting guy, I like to think... He had two personalities. One, when he walked through that curtain, he became gregarious, knew what he was doing, great comedian,
mm-hmm.
other one, when he was in his private situation, he would go to a party, he'd be in a corner.
Yeah, I heard that.
That would be it.
Yeah, he was quite a loner. He was a loner. He did not like the whole scene, huh?
That's right. He was a loner. But as emphysema got him, finally smoked too much.
Yeah.
Maybe drank early in his career too much.
Well, I hear the drinking was. Yeah.
Finally closed his eyes.
Yeah, I heard.
I liked him though. He was a good guy. He was very good to me.
Was he? Okay.
Yes. He used to call me the Kosher Mantovani when I conducted the show. Or he would say, "Who are you?" Well, we had a lot of fun together. But
how about
you want me to tell another story about him?
Yes,
Johnny.
Please do. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Stop me if you have to go to commercial.
No, go ahead.
But anyhow, I got a contract to do a CD on Christmas, for Christmas CD. So I called it Christmas with Friends, and I got Doc, Ed McMahon, Tommy Newsom, my 100 Voice Choir, and the NBC Orchestra to do this with me. To do the album.
Mm-hmm.
One day I'm sitting after we finished the album. It sounded pretty damn good. As a matter of fact, Ed McMahon got a Grammy nomination with it. And I said, you know, this would make a great Christmas special. So I got on the phone. This is what I do. And I called the programming department and said, I'd like to make a presentation. Can I talk to the vice president? Rick Ludwin was the vice president. He said, okay, come on up. And I did like a 10-minute presentation, left the album there, played the album, talked about a Christmas special. I had worked on a script at that point. And he said the famous words, "We'll call you." Well, that's like the kiss of death, you know. But I never expect him to call me. Well, he called me. About 3 days later, he said, go to the legal department. We got a contract for you to produce, write, and be part of the program. I thought I died and went to heaven.
So, wow, yeah.
Needless to say, I got the program started, and we went on location in the film crew in New Hampshire. A lot of the studio work was done at NBC in the pre-recorded in Evergreen Studios, and then did all the videos at NBC.
Wow.
So now I got this show done, except something was missing. It was the opening. Now, you know, the opening has got to get everybody's attention.
Sure.
Otherwise, you know, you might be spinning your wheels. So, happened to be walking in the parking lot. Who pulls up in his DeLorean was Johnny. So I walked up to him. I said, Johnny, I got this show. I'm producing Christmas show. Would you like to do the opening? He said, well, send me the script. Okay. I go back to my office. There was no script for him.
Mm.
So I get on the phone with my director. We put together a little piece like where Johnny is in his Santa Claus suit, and he's getting ready to deliver his packages at Christmas, and I wrote it up, brought it up to Johnny's office, gave it to the secretary, and didn't think anything would happen with it. Well, that night, the secretary came to me after the show, and she said, Johnny wants to see you. So I went up to his office, and there he was reading the script. He said, Shelley, this is okay, but what if we did this? And then he said, well, what if we had a cue card with 100 ho-ho-hos on it? I said, oh, sure, that's fine. Johnny, you think you want to do the show? And he said, yeah, I'll do the show. I said, but there's one problem. I don't have the kind of money in my budget to take care of your salary. So he says to me, I'll never forget this, he says, what's union scale, Joey? I said, well, it's about $1,000. He says, I'll take it.
Mm.
No. Doc was getting $15,000. Ed was getting $15,000. And Johnny was only getting $1,000.
Wow.
I mean, give me a break. So the next day I called the programming department. I said, Rick, guess what? I got Johnny for $1,000 to do the opening of the show. Well, you can hear a thud at the other end of the telephone. I think the guy fainted. Well, it took the show, and he did it. And the show ran for 8 years.
Wow.
It was on from 11:30. 12. It's called Christmas with Friends.
Mm.
And it had all the same ingredients that I had on my album, only Johnny was the opening act.
That's terrific. That's a guy who can be a friend, huh?
Oh, I mean, he's wonderful.
I'm surprised Ed did.
Came to my house one time when I was having a party for my choir. It was outdoor, you know, swimming and my barbecue and all that. So he showed up with the director. I invited him. He showed up. And we were having, at the same time, a ping pong tournament. Well, I put him up against one of my sopranos,
mm-hmm.
who beat the crap out of her. I turned to the soprano. I said, "Are you kidding? What are you? I'll lose my job. Would you give him some points?" Of course, yeah. That was, he didn't really care. But he was a competitor. He wanted to win.
And his brother directed the show for a long time, right?
Dick? In the beginning in New York, and then they had a falling out. I think.
Yeah, I don't remember.
To do a game show. Dick.
Dick Carson, yeah.
And then Bobby Quinn came on, and he stayed with the show the whole time after that. It's, it happens, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We're talking with Sheldon Cohen.
Oh, please, Shelly.
I love that name. I love the name Shelly. Remember Shelly Berman? That's how I grew up knowing the name Shelly.
Shelly Berman.
And talking about the Tonight Show and all the various celebrities, and of course I was fortunate enough to rub shoulders with so many people that I never thought I would meet. You probably more, because the Tonight Show was a magnet for big talent and promoting things and actors and actors. Right?
Listen to this.
Go.
We had 4,531 shows.
Wow.
And about 20,000 guests in 30 years. That's a lot of shows, and that's an awful lot of people to come on. Every day was a new gang there, and we had good music and great jazz playing. I mean, and a great Tonight Show band, and Johnny was funny. I mean, where do you find something like that? I mean, I thought I died and went to heaven. It was great.
I did briefly know or had acquaintance with one of his writers, and man, I just like the name just blows me away. Who's the large man? I can't believe I've forgotten his name.
Ed McMahon?
No, Ed wasn't a writer. Well, anyway,
one of the writers.
One of the writers.
I think I know who you're talking about.
I can't believe. Yeah, you know, he's an Irish.
You know that he streaked the show one time.
He was an Irish guy.
Streaking was in. They streaked the Oscars and everything.
Yeah.
So he streaked the show one time. He was
naked. I can't believe.
He was the stage.
Yeah, he was crazy.
He would have a heart attack.
Oh, he was such a wild guy.
I don't remember the guy's name, but I
did. Yeah, I can't remember him either. He was in the Smokey and the Bandit movies. He did movies too.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I didn't know that.
Big guy, right?
Yeah, I could see him now. He had a little mustache.
Yeah, and he had an Irish name. Mm-hmm. Oh, McHugh McCann, no, Mc something. Wow, I can't believe I forgot it.
Oh, it's all right. It happens. You got enough time for another story?
I got plenty of time here. Go on. Tell me one more.
This is a little personal story, but can I say a bad word?
You can say anything you want. We have no censor.
Okay, so it's not really a bad word. It's a scientific word. So I think it was the early part of 1962-63. I had a desk right near the writers. Dick Cavett was the next office over.
Mm-hmm.
And I just got this old desk, and I'm clearing it out and putting in my new material. And in the back of the top drawer, there's 2 8-millimeter films, and on it it says Fornication.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is the early 60s. You know, that stuff was not too available.
Man, stag films either, yeah.
So I went into Dick's office, and he said, "Dick, look what I found." I said, "I got 2 films, 8 millimeters on Fornication." He said, "Go down to the stage, talk to the head stagehand, and see if he can give an 8-millimeter projector. In the meantime, I'll tell everybody up here, not the women, I'll tell all the guys, and we'll set up a room for you." So I go down. Sure enough, I tell... The guy comes up with an 8-millimeter projector. He says, "Well, we're coming up there with you, Shelley." So about six stagehands and the projector and about four or five writers, we jam into this mini room. Somebody found a sheet, put it up on the wall, and they found a little table for the projector, mm-hmm. and I'm threading this thing. My fingers are trembling.
Uh-huh.
And I said, okay, guys, I'm ready. Hit the lights. And we turn out the lights, and I said, here we go. And I press the button to start the projector. First thing you see on the screen, in large letters, fornication across the top. For the next 30 minutes, we had pictures of two parakeets fornicating. I thought the guys were going to throw me out the window. Half an hour of birds screwing. I mean, give me a break.
Well, that was also something I bet you they never saw before.
It's probably not 1962, but anyhow, the anticipation was much than the actual thing. But I'll never forget that. I was so humiliated, but they didn't kill me because I just kind of stuck around. There was a time when I was doing Dick Cavett's show and the Tonight Show at the same time.
Really? You did the Cavett show? Well, wait a second, that was...
And I would run from one to the other.
But wait a second, that's in conflict.
When he had his own show.
What? When he...
Dick Cavett had his own show. I think it was on ABC.
Yeah, but wouldn't that be conflict? They were on against one another.
No, I don't think so. I think it was aired at a different time. I think it was an afternoon show. Anyhow, Bobby Rosengarten, our drummer, became the leader there. So he brought me along to be his librarian.
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing both shows for a year. And, boy, I was making a lot of money. A lot of exercise.
Now you've also
when you're just getting started, you do anything to stay in the business.
I understand. Yeah, I know. Well, when you were you also are a composer. You wrote some songs and you made some money on those too, huh?
Yes, I am a composer and arranger, and now I'm a lecturer. I produce CDs. I produce CDs for a religious company in Chicago. I did all their work, called ACTA Publications. And we did a lot of Catholic music, and...
But back in those days, give us a couple of titles. What did you write, and who did what?
Well, let me see. Well, I did... The big seller was The Rosary. I did a live interpretation of The Rosary.
Wow.
I'll tell you, I did a Spanish version, an English version, a shortened version. I sold 500,000 of them.
Phew.
I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
That was my biggest seller. But I did some Christmas albums with them, music to heal the body and the soul, and mm-hmm. Celebrate Christmas. A whole bunch of things for them that fleshed out their catalog. And I'm glad to do it, you know. I was pretty independent. I could produce them here, send them to Chicago, and they'll put it out.
But you did...
I still get royalties on it.
But you didn't you do a couple of pop... Yeah. You did some pop songs or something early on, didn't you?
Oh yes, I was. I have another story, and it doesn't pertain to the Tonight Show. You want to hear it?
Absolutely. Go ahead.
Oh, you're being very kind.
No, you're a great guest.
I'm writing with this guy Don Epstein. He's a lyricist. I'm writing music. We did a lot of shows outside of New York for various organizations, PTAs, any kind of organization that wanted a show, we would do it. We didn't get paid a lot of money, but we did it. So one day we were sitting around and talking. We said, you know, we ought to try something for Broadway. I mean, why not? You know, maybe we'll get lucky. So we said, well, what are we going to do for, we need something to hang our hooks on. And we said, let's look at some old movies. And we did, and we came up with a movie called Magic Town, which Jimmy Stewart and Jane Wyman. It was kind of an obscure movie, but it looked like it had possibilities. So we got in touch with our lawyer. He went to the archives, wherever you go, to find out who owned it. And he found out that it was owned by the Bank of America. It must have gone into receivership or something like that. Wow. And that the original writer was a guy by the name of Robert Riskin. So we looked up Robert Riskin. We found out that he was married. To a very nice lady. I'm saving that name till the very end. And that he died. So we didn't know if we could get the rights to it or whatever. But his wife's name was wait a minute, I'm getting a blank here.
What?
Fay Wray.
Oh my goodness.
Fay Wray was?
Yes, the King Kong lady.
King Kong's girlfriend.
Yeah.
So Fay Wray lives in Hollywood, and we get a phone and we call. And we tell her what we want to do, and that the Bank of America is involved. She says, I know that. I'm coming to New York. How about all of us having lunch? So I suggested we have lunch on top of the Empire State
Building.
But we had lunch at Rockefeller Ice Rink. It was a little restaurant there.
Mm-hmm.
She showed up, a lovely lady. We talked for about an hour. And unfortunately, we couldn't make it happen. But you know how thrilling that was? I was a young punk at the time.
Yeah.
To have dinner with, lunch with Fay Wray.
Just working on a Broadway
amazing
thing. Yeah, that is, I know I've had moments like that with people I just could not imagine having, you know, met.
And, when it happens, it's, you know, I'm a little starstruck.
Yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Anybody knows that.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. So did my friend Don, but it didn't happen, and so we moved on to other things. Don became a writer for some other groups, and I got the Tonight Show, and I was off and running.
So you wrote some other tunes. I saw a list of tunes at the international database there.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah.
Didn't you write something?
Only one of them?
Something with rain in it? Do you have something with a
Rain on the River?
There you go. Was that the big one?
It wasn't done nothing. It didn't go anywhere, but it's a nice song. I remember it. And Richard Heyman played the harmonica on it. Richard Heyman, famous arranger from the Pops, the Boston Pops. I remember doing that. Yeah, that was good. God, is there an archive of my tunes?
No, there's whoever put it on the movie database. There was a couple of tunes mentioned there.
Interesting.
That was one of them.
I became I'm a convert to Catholicism, and I got interested in choirs.
Yeah. Okay.
So I had a 100 voice choir at St. Mel's Church in Woodland Hills. We did a lot of albums, and we did a lot of concerts, and of course I wrote all the arrangements and a lot of the original tunes.
So wait, let me ask you.
Yeah, go ahead.
Let me ask you a question, though, because that's something strange, if it's not too personal to ask you. You're a Brooklyn Jewish person growing up who, you said you were converted to Catholicism when?
You want to hear this?
Yeah, I'm fascinated. That's fascinating to me, and I'm sure my audience wants to also. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, we moved to New Jersey. I told you, Paramus. Then we moved to a further out into a beautiful area called Woodcliff Lake. It's a little further out, nicer house, you know, and all kinds of things. And one day I went down the basement and I said, you know, it would be nice if we could finish this basement. But I'm not very handy with tools. So I spoke to one of my neighbors and she said, well, why don't we get, you know, a few of the neighbors and we'll go down there, we'll do it. We'll all work on it together, which we did. And it turned out beautiful. It was two couples, and Leona and my wife Leona and myself. And I said, you know, can I pay you for this? Well, they wouldn't accept any money. So I said, well, we're taking you out to dinner. So we had this lobster place. The six of us sat down. We had a great dinner. Came back to the house about, you know, 10:30 or so, and sat around and talked for a little while. And one of the subjects we spoke about was religion. You're not supposed to talk about religion and politics, right?
Right.
Well, we broke that rule, right? We talked about religion. And I asked them, well, what do you think about your beliefs? Well, this one couple, he is kind of noncommittal. He's Catholic also. And I committed, and he finished his spiel. And then the other one, Mr. and Mrs. Jordan, said that they were fairly into Catholicism. They told about theirs, and I told them that, you know, my religious upbringing was more of a tradition rather than a spiritual one.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't didn't have any deep feeling for my religion. That didn't make me bad, but it just was who I was.
Yeah.
And when they were leaving, this Jordan woman came over to Leona and myself, and he said, "Would you mind if I came and talked to you about religion?" "Oh, sure. I'm home in the mornings. We'll have a cup of coffee." Well, she came over for a year, and we talked about Judaism, talked about belief in one God, and the Jewish tradition and everything. And then she went, about halfway through the meeting, she would say, she said something like, "Would you mind if I talk to you about Jesus?" And I said, "Well, I don't know about that, but you know, you're welcome to come over." And she kept it up. And then my wife was kind of on her own track. She, after a while, she came to believe in Catholicism. But I resisted a lot. And one day we went to speak to one of the priests, a young guy at the local church. And I was sitting there with him in a prayer service, listening to everybody uttering their prayers. And this was in a small room. And finally I walked out and I went into one of the offices. And he followed me in there and he said, "Can I help you, Shelley?" I said, "I don't think so." And there was a Bible there. I picked it up and kind of ran through the pages. And I haven't found this since, but I remember reading something that went like this. It said, "Do not be worried about what people think of your choice of beliefs." Something like that. And you know, that was really the problem. I was worried about my family, my Jewish friends, what they would think about conversion. Mm-hmm. And so at that point I said, "Okay, I got it. I'm with you." And we had, the following Monday, we had a baptism. It was my wife, myself, and my number one son, who had been part of this thing. And here comes the really tough part.
Mm-hmm.
That Friday was my number two son, Bar Mitzvah. And the rabbi got wind of our conversion.
Uh-oh.
And he wanted to call off the Bar Mitzvah. Wow.
Mm.
My wife was in tears, and I was a bit shaken, but we called the local priest that we knew now, and he called the rabbi, and we modified the ritual in the temple. And luckily, the following week, Leona and I were going to California for the Tonight Show for 2 weeks. And at that point, I needed that break so I could kind of gather my thoughts. I wrote letters to pretty much all the close Jewish friends I had, trying to explain, you know, what it was now for me. And, you know, most of them were okay with it. Some who weren't, that was, you know, it was their problem, but it wasn't mine. And we just became Catholic. Somewhere after about 2 weeks coming home from California. Am I rambling on too much here, Frank?
No, I just have a question or two, but go ahead.
Oh, you can jump in if you want. But anyhow, about 2 weeks into this conversion, we went to church on Sunday, you know, we were in pretty much into it. I get a call from this guy at the church, and he says, "Look, we don't have a choir. You think you could start one?" I said, "I had no idea. I never did any choir work. I don't know where to even begin." So he says, "Well, we'll get you started. Will you do it?" Now, I couldn't say no. You know, I did have, you know, a lot of faith in my talent, and I had made kind of an oath that if they asked me to do something, I would do it. And so I did. 50 people showed up for the first rehearsal. After I had written this mass, you know, a ton of music just came out of me like water. And we rehearsed for about a month, And then this one Sunday, we were ready to go. It's like a Broadway opening. 50 people, my son playing conga drums, a harpist, an organist, and a guitarist, and the 50 singers, and my mass. So it came 11 o'clock. We all said a little prayer, and away we went. When it was over, there was a standing ovulation. I said to the choir, I said, does this happen often? They said, they can't believe it. It's never happened before. And I think God was kind of leading me to this, giving me a little, prodding me and saying, go ahead. You'll see. You'll see where it'll get you. Well, it was wonderful. So you had a couple of questions. You want to jump in?
Yeah, what was involved? Didn't you have to learn things? Didn't you have to have classes? I mean, you just can't.
Yes, that we talked about that, and all the time that this woman was working with us was like a class.
Yeah.
But it was only two of us in the class. We would ask questions. She would tell us about the rituals in Catholicism. Yeah, it was like studying, and they accepted that as preparation to become a Catholic.
Well, didn't you have to go through the?
So we did it.
Didn't you have to go through the New Testament and?
Okay.
Didn't you have to go through the New Testament and learn things and?
I'm sorry, I didn't get your last transmission, Frank.
I said, didn't you have to go through the New Testament and learn?
Yes, as I said, it was part of
okay.
The 1 year preparation with this gal.
Okay.
And she was consulting with the priests and covered all the bases, and we absorbed it. And then I finally made a commitment, and my wife did, and my son did at the same time.
What was the, did you have any questions?
Are you Catholic?
Well, I was raised Catholic.
Yeah, okay.
Did you?
Italian background?
Oh, yeah, I'm, yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So you know what it is. There's all kinds of classes, but they accepted our learning from this gal, and then it was done.
Well, you had a very positive experience there growing up in Catholicism in Brooklyn, New York was a little rough.
Well, there was Transfiguration Church around the corner, and on Sunday I was waiting for my ball players. They were all in church. I'm here patting my gloves, and let's get the game going. They're in their duds going to Sunday mass. But they, I knew what it was all about.
Sure.
And then they came home. I said, guys, let's go. And they would chuck their clothes and come down ready to play ball.
Who told, okay, that's... I think that's great. That's a good story, and that is fascinating how that happened. You don't hear that a lot. You don't hear that particular, translation or metamorphosis.
I think God works in strange ways. We're all different. We all maybe need different things. And he gives you, a way, that's for you only. I wrote a book about it also.
Oh, did you? Yeah, yeah. That was the next thing I was going to ask, because it says you've written other books. What else is there?
It's called My Journey to Catholicism. If you give me your address later, Frank, I'll send you a copy.
I will. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
And I'll send you a couple of CDs.
That would be great. That would be terrific. And now what about, who talked you into putting your biography, the autobiography? Who talked you into,
here's the way that I took some writing courses after the Tonight Show went off. I keep busy and doing. I had some ability as a writer.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember going to this one class, and she said, here's what you got to do if you want to become a writer. Just keep on writing. If you run out of ideas, just write about something that's really close to you that you know about, and just put it on paper.
Mm-hmm.
It may be great, it may not be great. Get yourself an editor, you'll be fine. And so I took her up on it. I just sat down over a period of time and wrote about things that, personal things, and out came this autobiography. What can I tell you?
Did you have any particular problem remembering things as well as you wanted to express them? Because
that's really a good question. I have a pretty good memory, and so that helped me. But if I got stuck, my wife was always there. I said, "What did we do? When did we do this? When did we do that?" Mm-hmm. And so I would consult with her, and she filled in the blanks in most cases. There's a love story in there with my wife. I mean, really,
sure,
wonderful story. Want me to tell it?
Go ahead. Go ahead.
You're giving me a lot of leeway here.
That's fine.
So
it's
here
good.
I am in Camp Chaffee, Arkansas, in the Army. I enlisted. I went back to Camp Chaffee to go through a second course on leadership. And I'm on my way home for a 10-day leave before shipping out to Germany. And I call my friends. They say it was like a Friday or Wednesday or something. They said, "Shelley, welcome back. We're going out Saturday to a place in Brooklyn. You might know this place called Ben Maxick's Town and Country."
Oh, the Town and Country, of course, yes.
Ben Maxick. All going to Ben Maxick's and get yourself a girl. Now, you know, 2 days for an advance for a girl, you know, I didn't think that would work too well. So I went through my black book, and there I come across Leona Levy. And I said to myself, "God, she was a pretty girl. We dated for a while. I really would like her." But however, the impediment I had was I said I would write, and I never wrote.
Mm.
I never wrote a letter to her. So I said, "I'm just going to wing it." So I called her up. I said, "Leona, this is Shelley, and I'm going on shipping out to Germany for a year or so. I'm going out Saturday with the guys. You know all of them. Would you like to go on a date?" She says, "Shelley, you said you were going to write to me and never wrote." And I said, "Is your address 165 Penn Street?" She says, "No, it's 65 Penn Street." I lied like a rock. I said,
"Oh, man.
Well, no wonder I kept getting those letters back." Pause. "What do you do? You got to go out with me." I just got off the subject quickly. Well, we went out that one night. She did go with me, and pretty much the whole time I was on leave. And then on the last night of my leave, we went to Radio City Music Hall, and then we went to the Hawaiian Room at the Hotel Lexington for dinner and dancing.
Wow, the Lexington,
Walking down Broadway.
Yeah.
From the park all the way down, and I happened to see this awning on 46th Street. You know what I'm talking about now, right?
Yes.
You have the picture.
Mm-hmm.
And there the awning said, "Gypsy Music." Well, I love gypsy music. So we went down to this place. It's a restaurant, nightclub. And it was like going into an MGM set. There were all the tables with checkered tablecloths, a bottle with wax drippings, a bottle of wine with wax drippings on the table, and this gypsy orchestra playing on a little dance floor. I thought, this is great, you know. And so she did, too. We were holding hands. And I said, "Let's dance." And we danced. And while we were dancing, I said, "Leona, I'm going away. I won't be back for a while. Will you think you'd wait for me to come home?" And she said, "Yes." And I gave her a little kiss on the cheek. And that was our engagement. Ta-da!
I thought you were going to say, "What? I'm going away for a while. Can you give me your address?"
I think she said, "When I went to pick her up, before I went to pick her up for Ben Maxick, she said, 'Don't forget, my address is 65. Yeah. Yes, I believe she said that. I left that out.
You,
tell you the things you do when you're a punk.
Well, that was a... When were you in the service? How long?
1953, end of 52 to 54.
Okay, so you didn't no Korean War, no, you didn't see him.
Well, it was pretty much over.
Yeah.
Then, but they needed me in Germany, and I became a surveyor in the artillery.
They needed me in Germany.
I wanted to be a musician, but I couldn't get the job.
Is that the title of one of the chapters? They needed me in Germany.
I guess so. But, you know, I really didn't mind it so much because, you know, it was a new experience. I think it gave me a sense of what it means to lead people. who I used to be TIE instructor on Saturday mornings, Troop Information and Education. Mm. I gave a 15-20 minute talk every Saturday morning to the battery about why we're here.
Wow.
That was something. Everybody wanted to go on leave, on furlough, and I'm telling them they had to sit there for it.
I'm amazed. I'm amazed.
Turkey was in the United Nations.
I'm amazed you could explain to people why they were there in only 15 minutes. How long is that?
Well, it was every week, though.
Oh, okay. It had continued. It continued.
It wasn't only that topic. There was some
other ones.
It was a great learning experience, and I ended up playing clarinet in the German band at the Enlisted Man's Club. Were you in the service?
No, thank you.
It's a good opportunity, Frank.
No, it wasn't when I was. It wasn't when I was supposed to go.
Okay. Well, anyhow, it was a thing. During the Korean War, we were all subject to being drafted. So I just decided, let's get it over with, and I enlisted. And I thought it was great. I had some fun. There were a couple of moments there when I could have, would have liked to avoid, but mainly it was good. So here's the ending of the love story. Ready?
Yes.
Okay, so here, now I'm going home. After I spent a year or so there, going home, I've run out of money, but in my last letter I said, I'll be home like in 12 days or so, I'm sailing on the USS Patch. I don't know when I'll see you, but it's going to be soon. So I get on this boat. 12 days, man, every day was torture. Finally get to New York. We're in Staten Island. The boat dock in Staten Island.
Right.
At 4 o'clock in the morning, I look up the Hudson River. There's New York City glistening with all the lights. And the Statue of Liberty is over on the right-hand side. And I'm just saying, I'm home. What a great thing. About 6:30, they come up with a clipboard. We'll call your name. Grab your bag and go down the gangplank. So I'm standing there waiting for my name to be called. I looked over the railing. Guess who's there?
Man.
The owner.
Yeah. Perfect.
And my mother.
You couldn't write it better.
Sign. Welcome home, Shelley. Well, needless to say, I had a few tears.
Yeah.
But when I came down the blank gangplank, I threw down my bag and threw Leona down and was intimate with her right there. No, that's not true.
You didn't tell them that when you were becoming a Catholic, though, did you, man?
No. God, no. but it was kind of a nice ending. Then after that, of course, we got the regular engagement, then we got married, started a family and all that good stuff.
Shelley, if
America is a wonderful place. You can do those things. Give it half a chance.
If your book is anywhere near as wonderful as it's been listening to these stories and talking to you, then I think you're going to have a big seller there.
Well, we'll see.
I know.
If it doesn't, Frank, I'm not Ernest Hemingway, so.
Well, it's important you did it.
What it'll be.
Something you had to do, and it's important you did it. And,
I've written a lot of other stories, but I kind of like going over my life. I think I've had an interesting life. Maybe somebody will get something out of it.
Well, you sure have.
Talking to young people, I would say this. Get as much education as you possibly can, and don't miss opportunities. Don't say, you don't want to say, I should have when I could have.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a bad thing. If I have an opportunity, man, I'll just go for it. And many people are a little shy about that.
Mm-hmm.
They say, they'll probably say no. Well, they may say no 8 times, but the 9th time they may say yes. And you don't know where that's going. I mean, it could be the chance of a lifetime. So if I were talking to young people, I'd say just be tenacious. Get a good education. And be ready for the opportunity, but don't let them go by you, because they may not come again.
That's a lot of what we've been telling a couple of generations in the times we've been here. You know, there's always we've gone through a couple of generations of audiences, so that it's good to know that there's still us people like us out there who can give that kind of advice. Yeah?
Well, it's been my byword for a long time. I mean, when I was a kid, it was a little bit different. I was thinking more of baseball and stickball. Remember stickball?
Stickball, yeah, right. That Brooklyn stuff.
The pink ball, you can hit that thing a country mile.
The Spalding's, they were Spalding's.
Spalding's. Spal- Got it. Right, you're okay. And the handball, and we'd have sit on the stoops and talk and play games with the girls and all kinds. It's very healthy kind of growing up.
And
there's not enough talking with one another these days. They've all got their heads buried in their computers. That's not going to be good.
We'll just have to see how that, we hope we'll see. I don't know how that's going to work out, but there still are plenty of people out there, I guess.
Yeah, we might not, but if not. Anyway, you're making a contribution, I'm making a contribution. We all have a different gifts to apply, and I wrote a story about gifts once, and we all are given something. You got to recognize you have something to offer, and you should do it. Don't just fluff it off. It may not be the greatest thing, like it'd be a Rembrandt, being a Rembrandt, but it could be something that would influence people. You never know.
I always say, tell people, especially young people, I say, look, just listen to people. When you talk, because, you know, you could find 100 gurus in your life. They're just things that people say, sometimes, you know, great things that you will inspire you and you'll understand later in life will come to you, from the most remarkable places, right?
I like that.
Yeah.
You don't mind if I use that. You haven't copyrighted that, have you?
No. My stuff.
I'm going to use that in one of my lectures.
Do that, yes. And we'll, and I so appreciate your being on, and maybe we can talk again, in the future.
Yeah, I got some more things. I edited myself a little bit here. I've got some stories that are a little bit blue. Is that where it's a little bit blue?
That's fine. Something old, something new, something borrowed, something blue. We could, maybe we'll even get you Skype so we could, this wouldn't be so awkward on the phone.
I asked around and nobody that I knew.
Well, we'll handle
it. But he lives in Oregon.
We'll see what we can do. And I'll be in touch with you so I can get some of those, gifts you told me about. And I'll,
maybe. Frank, you have to give me your mailing address. Can you do that now or are you going to wait?
I don't want to do that now.
Send me an email?
I'm going to do that now. I'll send you an email. I'll get it from Mr. Zucker. He'll give me your email, okay?
Okay.
Okay.
Excellent. And you are a good man, Charlie Brown.
Well, thank you, Mr. Cohen.
All right, have a good life. I hope to be in touch with you soon.
We shall. Thank you very much.
Bye.
Good night. So now we got, okay, well, let's turn this, okay. Listen, you hear it? Wow, that's, the phone thing, I gotta make this lower. Oh god, am I loud? Oh, the fucking mic is falling apart. Come on over here. Where is this thing? Here we go. Wow, that's a mess. I know it was a little low here and there. I had to ride it. This is like an old analog machine. I had to ride, as we used to say, ride the pot. Some of this is analog or what have you. So this phone, and the other reason I would have talked to him even some more, but you know, I don't want this phone, like I said, it's gonna lose its, there's a bunch of noise gonna be on this thing. I think we clipped, I don't know how much we clipped. Okay, so there we go for now. And, there you go. Okay. The book is called, let me tell you the book again, the book is called From Brooklyn to Burbank, Sheldon Cohen. Well, he called him Shelley, but it's Sheldon Cohen. I don't know anybody after leaving New York named Sheldon, someone who wasn't from New York. And as you said, you know, he turned religious evidence. And that's odd for, you know, a kid growing up Jewish in Brooklyn, to be a Catholic. But the name Sheldon, I don't know. Now I know there's a character, of course, the Big Bang Theory guy is Sheldon, and he's from like the character is supposed to be from the West, Oklahoma or something, right? Nothing. I never knew a Sheldon that wasn't a Jewish boy in New York. And so when they said his name is Shelley, I knew immediately when Mr. Zucker said, Shelley, oh, that's a Sheldon. Sheldon's got to be Sheldon. And I knew Sheldons in grade school. There were Sheldon, because it was a very popular name. Today, I don't know. Is anyone named Sheldon? I don't know. And like I said, and I've traveled around. I've been here, there, and all around. And no one I ever met named Sheldon. And I didn't meet a lot of people named Sheldon, of course. But anyone that I met named Sheldon was not... No, I didn't. I never met one other person. Did I say this clearly enough? I never met one other person named Sheldon who wasn't a Jewish boy from Brooklyn, or didn't grow up Jewish in Brooklyn. How about that? That's wild. So I knew immediately. And if you know, do you know anybody named Sheldon? Huh? I'm asking just out there. I don't know. The book is From Brooklyn to Burbank. And, you know, I didn't ask him because I know I don't have to ask him. He wrote the book. He said he did some, had a writing career, and I'm sure he had a good editor and what have you. So he doesn't have a ghostwriter or an assistant. You know, there's so many books that come out by, you know, by, and then the first name, the huge name is the personality. I'm doing biographies, autobiographies. So let's just say, let's just pick a dead one. So we don't get into any trouble like we would. We wouldn't get into trouble anyway. Let's say, yeah, Jimmy Stewart. So here, It Was a Wonderful Life. Hey, maybe that would have been a good title for his book. It Was a Wonderful Life, or It's a Wonderful Life by Jimmy Stewart. And then everybody says, with Arnold Stackamend. And that guy, that Arnold Stackamend down there is the guy who actually sat and, you know, with a typewriter. That's not a typewriter. You don't even know what I'm talking about if you don't have a typewriter. Yeah. Who actually sat there and did the writing. Jimmy did nothing but talk onto a tape recorder. And you know what tape recorder is. And stuff like that. But it's by Sheldon Cohen. And you can see the picture of the cover of the book on CotoloChronicles.blogspot.com, which is also where I want you to go to find, if you could find shows that you would like to hear portions of on this show. That means if we could go back into the archives, find some of these shows about this, that, and the other thing, because there were tons of stuff, and say, hey, there was a show, like you say, hey, there was a show in 2006. Let's say this last week, when the Artist D was here, talking about the first time the Artist D came onto internet radio, that was, I brought the Artist D onto it, and of course the rest is history. But, you know, it's the history of this, the, you know, internet broadcasting, okay? But D said that he was on 2006, and he gave me, I wrote it somewhere. I know where it's, yeah, well, anyway. And I said, really? Well, we may still have that. We may still have that show. So there's like, anyone would like to hear when the Artist D came on to the radio first? And those of you who know the Artist D have read books and have followed the Artist D in the broadcasting and writing, you know, beyond what the Artist D did in those days, in the beginning of the internet, breaking that ground. Can, of course, I could play that show. And when he brought it up, I said, wow, that was, 2006. I might have that one. So if anyone wants to hear that, you need to write to me, fcotolo@yahoo.com, and I will find that show. And then while I'm on live, I'm getting out some more here. Well, while I'm on live, like I am now, and of course, I'm on live, but I'm also, you might be listening to me on another one of the many great stations that run this show. While I'm on, I will play that part of that show. So like if it was the one about, for instance, where is the other one? We got some Brooklyn Dogs. Oh, that was, oh, February, Brooklyn Dogs? Did we run that already? I don't even know. I had some things here. 50s, 60s. Where is that? He said. He asked. This is how bad, Lee, I have chronicles. See? February 25th, 2010. Let's say that's only 8 years ago. Show on comic relief. I don't even remember it. We did a show about the 2010. We did more. This must be the one about the girl stuck in Africa who was trying to get out, the scam. And we called it Out of Africa, 2010. There's that one. Could play that. May 17, 2007, Roller Derby for Females. May 3rd, 2006, here's one, Alan Watts' son, Mark Watts. We talked about Alan Watts on this show, and if you don't know about him, you could learn about him through his son, Mark. We got tons of this. But we are also going to have, speaking of new shows, am I? I am now. I got to get her name. Olympia. Where's her name? Oh, no. What a mess. It's such a mess. And it's okay. I don't mind. Because this is what we've done for 20 years, and this is how we do it. Where is that? Olympia. Ah, yeah. Olympia LaPointe. We don't have to look her up. And she's probably, who knows, got a website about it. She's a rocket scientist. Now, also, speaking of that, you know the phrase, people use rocket science as if it's the pinnacle of knowledge. You have to be a rocket scientist. That's the pinnacle. That's the smartest people in the world are rocket scientists. Even though they say things like liquid water. Maybe I can get a hold of that show. The show that questions that. But in any event, in all events, and certainly in this event, Olympia LaPointe will be on this show. She's a rocket scientist. Rocket Science is also the title of the column I do for ForeCulture.com. Once a month, go read some thoughts, and it's a little different than a lot of the funny stuff I have. Like, for instance, 148.ca/Frank. What is that coming up on me? 8 years ago. 148.ca/Frank. Every week. There's a new blog up, and it's humor based on, well, you go read it. I'm not going to explain it. You laugh, you don't laugh, you don't like it, you don't go back. But there's a new one every week, and there's been one, and it's and whether I live or die, we do know that it will be a new one every week through 2019. This is how far ahead I have written these, and they're all exclusive. In other words, that's where you see them. That's it. But rocket science is at foreculture.com, which is a cutting-edge digital magazine it's culture. There's four cultures. What are the four cultures? Music, words. I'm in words. Music, words, art, and science. No, I don't know the other one. Anyway, but Olympia LaPointe is truly a rocket scientist. Smart. You know, the people who put the rovers on Mars. Here, rover. They call it a rover. I wonder if they... Okay, and she will be talking with me, Frank Atolo, who is, let's face it, I love space. I love all that stuff in space, and we've talked about time and space and black holes and galaxies, and, of course, with Dr. Waldar, when we get into that, he'll be back, too. I know he will. That kind of stuff. But Olympia will be talking with us about anything that I bring up. And it will be a little bit clearer because we will be able to use Skype. I do apologize, and I hope you heard everything. I heard everything, and it looks like we've recorded everything loud enough so that if people want to hear more about Mr. Cohen or want to hear that discussion, which, of course, went far and above and beyond, far and beyond the basic Carson stuff, TV and Hollywood stuff that we talked about. And I had no idea that his life was going to... Did you hear that? Yeah. I had no idea that his life was... But, you know, people's lives are like that. You say, well, you know, this guy was a star in these five movies. And then, you know, you talk to the guy
or the girl or the woman, and you find out that they're just like you and I, and we have all these things that go on in our lives, and we just didn't wake up. They just didn't wake up and become these celebrities. So there's that. So I'm glad for him, and I'm glad to have hawk his book among the books I do hawk, including Hollywood Raj. Speaking of Hollywood, Charles Dennis's book is available on Amazon. Hollywood Raj, that's R-A-J. Charles was on here a couple of weeks ago talking about his book. And then there's my books, which are all over the place. Now, my books are inexpensive compared to some of these other books because they for whatever reasons. I mean, digitally. And, for, I think under $30, you can get all of my books. So I'm going to hawk them again now because I want you to buy these books, and they're funny. Look, you could read the stuff I do for nothing on the interweb. Why not read the books themselves? There's a couple of serious things there too. It's not just all comedy. I've got a couple of serious books, but there are things there, and they've all been reviewed very well, but I can't say that they've sold millions because they haven't. And I just know if more people were exposed, more people would buy it. Well, I hope what Shelley was talking about, and there's a great fear that a lot of people have about what is, you know, what is the practice of reading and how many young people or millennials or what have you read. But we're going to get into that too, because coming up one of these Thursdays, I've been working out this thing with a surprise guest who's going to remain anonymous. And that guest, I'm not going to tell you the guest, is going to be here, and we're going to have a real smackdown generational talk. Now, of course, this is the kind of thing I said, like, well, someone said, like, why don't you have your son? Well, because my son is my son, and we have a relationship. Someone I only know who is a millennial, and I want to give him and I am going to give him. I don't just want to. I am. And he's agreed. So, okay, so what's left after that, right? Just do it. The gift of anonymity so that he can speak freely and not get into any kind of trouble. A lot of young people do things on the interweb, on Twitter, on the Instagram, on the this, the that. And I know, I know what this stuff is all about because I was here from the beginning. And I'm joking around when I say the internet and the interweb and the Twitter and what have you, because we introduced the world to Twitter here. Okay, forget it. I don't need to give myself give you a resume. Here's the deal. Because young people do things they are very sorry about later because they don't think, and now they have this theater where you just don't go on and say everything. They don't have the acumen of communication yet. So I figured, well, you know what? If this person, if I the gift of anonymity so that he can say whatever he wants and nobody's going to know. If he says something, it's not going to come back at him. He's going to be my source, and I'm not going to give him up. You do know it's a him, because what am I going to do? You know, tell you. You're going to hear him. He's going to be on one of these weeks, and we're going to really get into this stuff about reading, about education, about the phone stuff, and, you know, about how concerned other generations are about youngsters who have their whole world of communication is so different. It's digital. When communication was analog, we did a lot more. Well, I don't know. We do a lot of talking to one another, but I think getting it from somebody who's not that close to me, someone I didn't raise, which, by the way, those are my sons. So we're going to do that. And I will let everyone know on Facebook and Twitter and wherever else, and on CatoloChronicles.blogspot.com. But let me tell you something. If you're looking for me on Facebook, and I know some people have said, you know, you told me you could, and they don't talk like this. These voices that come to my head, these characters, when I say someone said to me, and I do this stupid voice because they just come to me. Not that anybody, everybody who talks to me is stupid or has stupid voices. But for some reason or other, I have to go into character because I'm morbidly a vaudevillian. There's the name of my book. I'm morbidly vaudevillian. These people say to me about, what was I talking about? I was talking about him coming on. People say to me, why, this happened. This is why I think I'm coming full circle with this show. It's because this stuff happened to me in the beginning. Never happened to me in the middle once I got rolling in this show. We go to rabbit holes and fly around with discussions everywhere and don't happen. But when I talk about people telling me things, I come up with these voices, and I apologize if they sound demeaning, because they're not. I don't know what I was going to say, but we're going to do that with him. He's not going to be on Skype, I hope. And the way it is planned, he will be right here. So there'll be no problem with talking sound. I mean, talking sound. That sound is talking. Talking is sound. There'll be no problem because, as I said, am I going to keep this? As I said, he'll be live here. So we're gonna try to get that together, and we're also gonna do some of these other things I mentioned before. And I don't know what else we're going to do because we don't plan these shows. Just as we go along, we come up with stuff. Now let me say this, because what's coming up? If you're listening on the live stream, if you're not listening on the live stream, you're listening either from Juiced Talk on the archives, or you're listening of. On one of the other great stations that replays the show during the week. Okay? But coming up right after this show on the live stream, and I hope on some of the stations that run this show, is Tom Savino. Savino Veritas. Savino Veritas. Tom Savino, my former partner and a person who I worked with in all sorts of what was I thinking? Platforms? Why do I say platforms? See, that's the digital in me. Platforms. So many platforms. Different areas of life, of work, of art. Oh, now I got to put this mic back onto the, you don't have to know this. Just listen as I'm doing this. I'm going to put this, my other microphone on here so that we can play the theme. Get rid of that. Whatever's left of those windscreens, they have corroded. That's perfectly what they've done, corroded. There's that. I know. This is not much different from the first time we came on the air. This show does. Tom Savino's coming up, and if you want to hear some real crazy stuff that dates back, oh boy, yikes, 78, 80, 99, 2000, 2010, 2028. We're talking 40-something years, are we, Tom? Yeah. I guess. If you want to hear some crazy stuff, that comedy, the show is dead air. A lot of it never made it onto the air for lots of reasons. And there are things there that are politically incorrect and what have you, because this was way back then in the 70s. Dead air, a show that eventually, well, I think a lot of people who did hear it, brought something with them into the world of comedy. You be the judge. You listen to Tom Savino and Frank Attolo in Dead Air, a half-hour radio show available on Juiced Talk. Now, that's J-U-I-C-E-D, Juiced, as if, you know, you're like a juicer. JuicedTalk.com, where you can hear and you can download them. You can have them for nothing. These are classics, and you can have them for nothing. It's all at the expense of us, of me finding it and getting it to Tom, who now lives 3,000 miles from me, maybe 2,500, because I don't live that far east, and he's far away. You can listen to this stuff and just, you know, have an open mind, because this was done then, and some of it is still, a lot of it is not dated. And and other stuff. Anyway, Tom's going to be on the show, hear this show again soon, and we're going to talk about more of the old stuff and the new stuff. Not our new stuff, but new stuff that's going on around everywhere. So he's coming up with his fascinating, I don't know what to call Savino Veritas, other than it's contemporary, it's funny, it's satirical, it's got an attitude, and it's produced terrifically. And believe me, I've been with Tom in recording studios, you know, most of my adult life, here and there, and Tom was never as technical as he has become with on the Apple platform. I'm on the other one. So you can hear Tom Savino show and enjoy it. And you can go back and listen to other ones at Juiced Talk. You can also hear whatever the Artist D does as shows. I mean, the Artist D does shows here and there and some great guests also. In the meantime, in between time, that's that. Get the books. Get the tapes. Listen to me. Get the books. Get the, tapes? I said tapes again. Get the, because they're files. I don't know what you call them anymore. You know, people, a person comes out with a record. If it's in vinyl, it's a record. But, you know, as I came out with a CD or came out with something else. Well, I don't know. Either way, I'm going to have to be moving on right about now. Wow, that's loud. Huh? Cool. I don't know how that happened, but... Once again, thank you, Mr. Shelly Cohen, for some great stories. And those of you who had your Cthulhu Chronicles notebook out, I hope you took notes. You could go look it up. A lot of the stories and names, what have you. And then have fun with that. We'll be back, hopefully, next week. Maybe Olympia Lapointe next week, or maybe the mysterious guest, or whatever else happens. I just hope we all find that at that now, we are okay and we make it, because... life's like that. Good night, Mrs. Ernstwhile, wherever you may be located. See, I had to change that because I didn't want to end it in preposition. Okay. He's coming on. You'll love him. Me, I'll leave you. I've been talking for what? Now, to almost 2 hours, and even though Mr. Cohen talks some too, but as you know, I leave you because when I leave you, it's because I have nothing more to say.